Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe. I'm Pete Shambo, and to my left is...
Paul Wilson.
Hey, Paul, how you doing tonight?
Just ducky, just trying to stay cool down here in Dallas.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm up in the frozen north, so I think it was a balmy 57 or 60 today. You people may have noticed that there's just the two of us tonight. Gene Myers has taken a sabbatical, a martial arts sabbatical from the podcast for a while. He's got other things to do, and as I understand, he's starting his sabbatical at a monastery in Tibet, up in the mountains.
That's right. I think he's actually meditating even as we speak underneath a waterfall.
There you go. Yeah, there's a picture. So tonight, I thought we'd start off with talking about something that happened last month. We thought we'd give it some time, give it a little respect, and. But it is kind of topical, and it does, I'm sure it's on the mind of a lot of martial artists, and that's the Virginia Tech situation. We want to approach it from a little bit different angle. You know, there's a lot of the media talked about that nobody defended, and there are young men there, and they should have done something. And we'd like to talk about that as it pertains to the martial artist.
Yeah, you know, my boss, we were actually talking about it around the meeting table one day, and he said, like, you know, you're in a college where, you know, there's all these young, fit, like, football players and basketball players and, you know, whatnot. So, you know, why didn't somebody just tackle this guy? And, you know, of course, me being me, I jokingly said, like, well, you know, it's a classroom, so it's not like the football guys are actually in class. But now, I heard people hang up just now. But you know, this is, you know, coming from a guy who was in the army, and you know, he has kind of been there and had people shoot at him and whatnot. But it's like, you know, from my angle, is all the talk, and this was kind of the same thing after 9/11, was, you know, why didn't somebody just tackle him? You know, at a minimum. And for me, it boils down to, like, and armchair quarterbacking, like, yeah, why didn't you? Well, you know, when the gun's pointed at you or in the same room with you, it might be a little bit different.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, okay, I thought you got cut off. I agree. You know, as martial artists, we're trained to defend ourselves. I don't know, I'd have to honestly say that we've never talked seriously in my dojo or any of the seminars I've been to about defending what you do if it's defending other people. I mean, like, if you come upon a situation, of course, you know, depending on the situation, you would certainly attempt to defend somebody else. But in a situation like that, when a guy has a gun, that's one thing that every seminar I've been to where we've had talks or demonstrations by police officers or people that have been in combat that do the art with us. You know, they say, you see a gun, you give the guy what he wants, or you get out of the situation. You know, you don't fight a gun.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, at best, like, you know, a 1 in 6 chance he's going to shoot you, you know, yeah. if you run him. And, you know, I know the people, the statistics, they say, like, you know, inside 21 feet or inside 10 feet or whatever, you know, you're more likely to take the guy with the gun than the gun guys are likely to take you. But, you know, again, that's a piece of metal slamming into your body. And I guess he had like 9mm, and he had a 22, which, yeah, I've heard some people on some other podcasts and other martial arts venues that are like, oh, well, you know, I can take the shot. And I'm like, yeah, my ass. You know, being shot sucks. I mean, I don't know, but I know anything entering my body is... hurts, you know, and adrenaline and everything's going to kick in, yeah, but, you know, a 9mm hits you in the chest and pierces your lung, you know, you're going to run up there and grab him, and then pretty soon that lung's going to fill with blood, and you're not going to be able to do anything, and then you're probably going to die. So, I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, be a coward, but I'm also saying, you know, the people, because, I mean, I guess there were some guys who just laid there while the guy was walking through the rooms and shot people.
But you don't, the thing too is that, first of all, you'd have to be somebody that is clear-headed enough that you can think to wait for an opportunity. And secondly, you need to be able to recognize the opportunity. So I'm not that familiar with different types of guns.
Well, yeah, and that's what some people have said, like, you know, oh, well, that's why people need to have guns. You know, if you understand how a gun works, you know, you have a better chance. And there's and some validity to it. I mean, you know, I like shooting guns. I mean, I grew up shooting guns. I grew up in Arkansas. Everybody had a gun. And but, you know, it's people said, like, well, as martial artists, you know, you should learn weaponry so that way you know how it works. And I agree because I say the same thing, you know. But when a gun, you know, they pull the trigger and the metal thing comes flying at you. That's what most people need to know.
Yeah, but, well, but what I meant by understanding, I mean, I fired weapons as well, but, I mean, I'm not familiar enough that if I had recognized, say I was in that situation, I don't know what I would do, but the ideal thing would be to recognize the weapon, you know, have an idea how much is in the clip and have an idea of you know, how he reloads it so you can calculate how much time you have. Rather than just jumping up, try to make a rational decision of the best time if you're planning some sort of defense, do it rationally. And you can't say that some of those people maybe weren't planning that and got shot before they had the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know who was charging them. You know, after 9/11, I was still a working journalist back then, and we did some stories on. I was actually kind of jazzed because, you know, there was as a martial artist, the first thing I was thinking was like, wow, all number of people are going to start going to martial arts schools, you know, and get training. And sure enough, the next month, and Black Belt and a bunch of the other martial art magazines, there was all, you know, these people, you know, marketing stuff towards stewardesses and other flight crew and, you know, how to defend yourself in close quarters. And we went to a school that was, it was a, like a Tengsudo school or something, and like judo and da da da, and the techniques they were talking about was like, yeah, well, they were saying that yeah, a lot of people had come and signed up for martial art courses after 9/11, and but the techniques they were demonstrating, which it may have just been, you know, because they were demonstrating, were like really big techniques that, you know, really wouldn't work on a plane. So you know, I guess being a martial artist. You know, if you're somebody who's like maybe somebody who does a lot of high, crazy kicks and, you know, or you know, is not training to like maybe just engage somebody one-on-one, then maybe that's also part of the thing is, you know, if you're, you know, let's say, you know, a sport taekwondo guy, you know, or girl, you're thinking like maybe, well, I don't know if I can get up and, you know, do a kick in time to take that guy out. You know, and if you're a jiu-jitsu guy, you're thinking maybe like, well, I could tackle that guy and take him down, but he might shoot me, and that might stop you.
Yeah.
You know, so I imagine maybe if you're a martial artist, the frame of mind of where you're coming from may also come into play of like, well, what should I do?
Yeah, and like I said, you know, one of the things that's been drilled into me through the training is that if it's a gun, you do everything. You know, this is, like you were talking about 9/11, this is like 9/11. Previous to that, most plane hijackings ended up with ransom and whatever, you know, the mm-hmm. safe landing and ransom. So people's frame of reference was that's what's going to happen, so why do you need to defend yourself on the plane, except for the last one because they knew what was going on. But it's the same in that situation. It's the same thing. I've trained all my martial arts career to defend as a last resort against a gun. Do everything you can to avoid the gun being pulled on you in the first place.
Right. And I guess the devil's advocate argument for that is, well, the gun was pulled. But, you know, as far as I know, I mean, the guy was like walking in rooms and just randomly shooting people. Yeah. So I think maybe the trigger in a lot of people's minds that didn't jump up and do stuff was like, holy crap, there's bullets flying everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and of course the shock of, you know, there's these guys that say like, well, you know, I was a bouncer and, you know, I was blah and, you know, I'm used to blood and you did bull crap. You know, I'm thinking if somebody walks up in front of you and shoots somebody right in front of you, there's going to be a minute or two where you're like, holy crap, did that just happen?
Yeah.
You know, when stuff happens in front of you, you're, you know, like, holy crap, did that just happen?
Yeah, and then you have, like I said before, you have to make if you're thinking of doing something, you have to calculate when the right time is, and you know, it takes us a lot of knowledge to know when the right time is. I mean, if somebody was
because you've got to close distance, you've got to weigh what's around you, you got to weigh what, you know, what weapons you have. the whole shooting match.
Yeah. Now, almost as bad as not defending yourself, or in the same tone, is you have people, you have martial artists, and not even martial artists, you have self-defense experts, with the air quotes around experts, marketing because of Virginia Tech.
Frappin' vultures. These are just, you know, the people who, same thing happened after 9/11, just like I said. These people, Pete knows this was a hot button issue with me. As you know, people who, like, I've seen it before, all these people who go like, oh, you know, civilian defense stuff, and, you know how to defend your stuff. Well, you know, when something like this goes on and people market right for it, you know, defend yourself in this situation, you know, learn combat techniques to, you know, defend yourself against a gun. Done, and you know what happened. And, I mean, they basically used the wording of, like, you know, you're going to be attacked. See, look, you can be attacked anywhere, so you better come to our class. And it's they're vultures. They're just swooping in on a frappin', you know, carcass.
And working on fear.
Yeah, you know, and that's the one thing, you know, you don't want is basically a knee jerk reaction. And, you know, they're people who are doing this are, you know, businessmen, and they probably got bills to pay and blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, they're thinking of it as a way because they're removed, you know. But I'm wondering if in the town that Virginia Tech is based in, if anyone's doing that. I bet not.
Well, you sent me the link. There's a website that's pretty much the guy. That's what the guy's talking about.
Yeah, and we're not going to repeat the website here because I'm not giving those bastards the time of day.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I given the benefit of the doubt, maybe this was something that they had going before, and this is just really poor timing. Well, then maybe they should have frappin' thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're obviously not in Virginia, so, you know, it's again, they're removed from it. It's ridiculous. It's irresponsible as a martial artist to say you're a martial artist and then capitalize off the trauma of someone else. And, you know, I know what I speak because, again, I used to be a journalist, and that's how journalism started making its money, which is a reason why I'm not a journalist anymore. Is, you know, going after the blood, you know, going after the fire. And that's – it's an easy way out. It's an easy way to make a dime, but it's frappin' heartless. And patooey, I spit on you.
Yeah. Well, they you know – and also, besides all that, besides the sleaziness of it, and just the icky feeling you get from associating with it, you don't learn to defend yourself against the last type of attack. I mean, you know, it's we've talked about 9/11 before. I mean, all of a sudden we're starting to right after 9/11, they were saying, well, we got to defend another hijacking air attack. The people that did this, the people that planned it, know that you're going to defend against that, so they're planning something else. And it's the same thing in martial arts. You can't, just because somebody in your school or somebody in your family got attacked a certain way, that doesn't mean that you should focus on that type of defense.
Yeah, well, you know, it's long been said, and it's been said, and you know, when I was in the military, they talked about it. I've heard cops say it. I've heard counterterror guys say it. You know, you can't stop someone who doesn't care if they're going to die. You know, and you know, that was the thing with the Flight 93 that crashed in Pennsylvania on 9/11, was the fact that they knew those people were fighting back, so they ditched the plane.
Yeah.
They didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's I read the transcripts on the black box for that flight, and they were like, okay, well, let's end it, and they drove it into the ground. You know, it wasn't that. And the defenders got in there. I mean, they gave it a try. Actually, I think they were getting ready to break down the door, which is why they did it. And, you know, once a plane is plummeting straight down, I mean, things aren't performance vehicles. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's someone who is determined. That's just, you know, we do it all the time with, you know, like people with sucker punches. If they just come up and swing at you, you know, unless you're like some super ninja, you might not catch it, you know, because they're determined. They don't care, you know, like the UFC guys, you know, they train to take a pounding. So they're, you know, it's kind of hard to stop somebody. You know, if they're on top of you and you're swinging and hitting them, well, they train for that.
Yeah.
They're trained to be hit. So, you know, it's harder to subdue somebody who's trained to take that kind of punishment. Well, it's harder to subdue, to stop somebody who doesn't care about their own life and they're just coming after you. Well, and you can't train somebody against that.
Exactly. Well, one of the seminars I took, I probably heard this more than once, but one sticks out. We were being trained against a knife attack, and the gentleman that was training us said, if you go up against a knife, you're going to get cut. You just have to pick where you're going to get cut.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you're going against, to get back to Virginia Tech, if you're going against a gun, you have to assume you're going to be shot. And I don't really know of too many good places to get shot. I mean, you can't as easily pick where you're going to get shot as against a knife.
Well, yeah, and the fact that it, you know, can do more collateral damage because
yes.
You know, once the bullet is in you, it's going to keep going and maybe bounce off some stuff. You don't know. And it may be one of those ones that explodes. Or there's, you know, different factors involved.
Yeah.
And then also the fact that, you know, you grab the guy's gun, you wrestle with him, he shoots you, the bullet goes through you, hits somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, and there's also the responsibility, especially with a gun, of the people around you.
Yeah.
You know, and we've spoken of this in self-defense situations of, you know, like one of my students has said, like, well, you know, I was out somewhere, I had my wife, I had my kids, and some guy was starting some crap. You know, what do I do? You know, and
laugh it off.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of permutations. I'm like, well, there's, you know, a lot of different flavors. There's a lot of different, you know, how they're attacking you, what they're attacking you with, you know, where you're at. It all comes down. If you're in a classroom and a guy's got a gun, you know, but you're in a classroom full of people and he's at the front of the class that you have to raise, you know, and they've come in the door. There's only one way in, one way out. You know, it's you got to secure the weapon, you got to stop the guy, and you got to let people get out, you know, and where does that fall in the priorities? How are you going to make that happen so people don't get hurt? You know, yeah, really, I guess what it could kind of come down to is like maybe one person could have said, I'm going to sacrifice myself to do it, but, you know, and this is going to be a generalization, and, you know, I don't even, as Giuliani says, I don't even agree with myself sometimes on this, but, you know, a bunch of college kids are not that exactly the most, or the least self-absorbed people in the world.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty much there to do school and, you know, maybe party and, you know, do whatever and learn themselves and da-da-da. They're not really focused on the people as a whole. Hmm. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, I guess, what I've walked away from thinking about this is it's not necessarily cowardice to do nothing. I mean, there's a million reasons to do something and there's also a million reasons to do nothing. And it's an individual choice, and you have to live with your choice.
And that's the flip side. You know, in the military, you know, when you're in combat, which I've never been in combat, I was a submariner, so, but we kind of got the same mindset because we're all kind of interdependent on one another. And, you know, you always hear the stories about in World War II and Vietnam and you know, probably even today, that a grenade lands in the middle of a group of guys and one guy jumps on it to save his buddies, you know, or one guy gets shot. And I was listening on NPR, and there was a guy, he was a doctor in the forward zone in Iraq, and he said he would have guys that would, like, you know, come in, they'd patch him up, and they're like, can I get back to my unit? Because I can't let my guys down, you know. And the mindset of your average person walking down the street is not worried about their guys.
Yeah.
They're worried about themselves. They're worried about their family. But they're not worried about the people in the classroom with them.
Well, part of the training in the military is to make you as a team and make you as a family, so that you feel that way about the people you're with.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. But I mean, people don't get that. The dojo, you get that in the dojo, you know. But you know, I don't know if anyone I've ever trained with is going like, you know, I'd jump on a landmine for that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a certain amount of, and it's the same thing, you know, we've talked about before about, you know, responsibility to yourself, responsibility to your family, responsibility to your dojo, responsibility to your community. You know, in my dojo, I try and make them responsible to our dojo. I can make them responsible to the building the dojo's in, the yoga studio, and then try and make them responsible to the community that's around the dojo, you know. So, yeah, you start feeling more of a part of it, and, you know, maybe as a society we've kind of gone to that point where, you know, if, you know, maybe back in the old days, you know, when everything was still a six shooter, you know, people maybe felt a little more a part of their community where if somebody walked in and started shooting, somebody would attack them. Of course, probably everyone was armed back then too. So
yeah. So Well, Paul, I think we can go to our third subject tonight, which is actually while we've been talking, I've been thinking about this. Maybe we could have people send in their suggestions for our we're going to try to make this a regular podcast event, regular, I guess. I forgot the exact title, Paul. What are we calling it?
The working title is "You Might Be in a Questionable School If."
You might be in a questionable school if. And, well, Paul's got the first one. And you can email us at karatecafe@gmail.com if you have one you'd like for us to repeat. Okay, Paul, what is yours?
Mine is I was actually down at the yoga studio today supporting it because we were doing a thing for the community that it's in. And I met somebody who had studied jiu-jitsu. But I guess they had dropped out of martial arts for a while, and now they were taking up, and they just started literally, like that week, they just started at a kung fu school. And I was like, oh, really? What kind of kung fu? And so she was like, it's Shaolin something. And to be parenthetical, you know, there's a lot of kung fu schools that, man, their names are wordy. You know, the Black Dragon Flying Lip Hung Sung Sung School. You know, and like, I'm sure it means something in Chinese, but anyway, all our Kung Fu listeners, to take this with a grain of salt, or a grain of
rice.
I was like, oh, really? So, you know, she was telling me about it, and it was a pretty good workout, and blah, blah, blah. And she was saying how they were doing a lot of kicks and a lot, you know, doing horse stances and whatnot, and they were really tired. And so she said to the instructor, I said, Sensei, why do we do this? And in my head, I was like, clink, Sensei.
Yes.
Isn't this a kung fu school? Shouldn't it be at a minimum sifu? So this was internal. And I was like, okay, so you're using the Japanese terminology in a Chinese school. And then, bong, 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 you might be in a questionable school if they can't even get their terminology right.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're in some place that, you know, is obviously, you know, marketing itself as a style from a culture, and then, you know, it's like being in a Korean school and they're using, you know, Indonesian terms, you know, or it's, and I'm like, well, no. that's questionable. I've never been in the school. I don't know the school. I'm just saying that's, you know, kind of one of the things that in my mind that, you know, if they can't get their act together. Now, I know there's some of our eclectic or mixed martial arts brethren out there who I respect and talk with on a regular basis, and some of the other people that listen to our podcast and join us in our forums at karatecafe.com/forums. I know that some of them are in schools that, you know, the instructor has trained in a couple of different styles, so maybe they have some, you know, they're teaching stuff that's kind of kung fu-y, but they're using, you know, maybe some, they're mixing up the terms a little bit because it's, you know, a mixed style, and I guess, you know, that's okay, and that's fine, but it's just as soon as I hear that, it makes me go, hmm.
Yeah,
because I guess for my money, if you're going to mix a bunch of the styles, then you need to cut it down the middle and say, you know, I'm going to be yes sir, I'm going to be sir or instructor, or you know, or make something up even.
Yeah. Well, to clarify, we're not saying that any one of these means it's not a legitimate school. We're just saying that if you add too many of these together, hopefully over the weeks we'll have more. If you add too many of these together and you see it in a school, then it's time to start questioning it. Just one doesn't make it a bad school.
Yeah, and if you're one of our loyal listeners, you know, if you've been to a school, what we're looking for is we're going to relate these and we'll give credit where credit is due. I don't think we'll name the schools. I think we'll just maybe the area.
And
I don't know.
We'll use in your email. Tell us if it's okay to use your name, your first name, your last name, that type of thing.
And you can say, like, you know, I was in a school one time and they did this. Or, you know, I heard of this school one time, you know, to dog a school. You know, it needs to be a personal, like you were in the school and you worked out a little bit, or, you know, a member of your family, something like that. It's got to be some relatively personal experience.
It's got to be a little humorous, and we're not in it to defame anybody, so we're not going to use any identifiers for...
Yeah. If nothing else, it's a karate Seinfeld moment, as I say. It's I might be picky about it. It may not mean anything, but it annoys the crap out of me.
There you go.
It's just something you go like,
Oh, Arsenio Hall, things that make you go.
Exactly, things that make you go Kia.
Okay.
Maybe that'll be the title. I don't know. But write in. Let us know what you think. Give us a good title for it.
KarateCafe@gmail.com.
So that was my little thing. It's just and we started talking about martial arts and whatnot. And you know, that's the kind of good thing was. I mean, even though I was kind of like, well, okay, yeah, we talked about, you know, she'd studied jiu-jitsu before, and so we were talking about that and talking about joint locks and the similarities and differences in martial arts and blah 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 blah. And so again, you know, so we just had something to talk about, even as people were taking two different martial arts.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. It's interesting. Martial arts, it's a big community, but it's a community. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's like no matter, I know my good friend Dan is going to cringe when he hears this. He says, but, you know, a punch is a punch. And there's only so many ways to do it, so you've always got something to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I think that's about it for tonight, unless you have anything else to add, Paul.
Hey, anybody in Dallas want to come work out?
There you go. When and where?
I've got. I need to give you my Tales of the Dojo. Cue the music. I have my first official association joining student now.
Oh, excellent!
They drank the Kool-Aid and then they joined the association. So I'm sending their dues off to Okinawa, and they'll have to get their association number, and they're going to get a patch and the whole shoot and match, and they'll. They'll soon be testing for 10th Q. I do testing for 10th Q is what I do. He already has his white belt and a gi and all that stuff like that. So what I'm going to do, and give me some feedback on this, people, if you think I'm high, is what I do is I take their belt. I say, okay, give me your belt. And then, if they want to come to the class and work out and wear the gi and wear the belt, I don't care. But as soon as they join the association, now they have to start earning it. So what I'm going to do is I take the belt, and then they test for 10th Q. And when they test for 10th Q, then I give them their belt back.
Huh.
And 10th Q is really nothing more than just learn the basics, you know, just whatever the basic stuff is and learn the terminology and stuff like that. So, I don't even think I'm going to charge for it, but it's just, because, they've already bought the belt, so, but just, okay, well, here it is. Here's your certificate that you're 10th Q and that, you get to wear your belt and put some stripes on it here down the road and, just that way they're feeling the love. But but all my other students are just like they just kind of come in and work out. So
Everybody gets what they want. What I've always said about martial arts is you get what you want out of it.
Yeah, he's studied in a couple different. He's been a Taekwondo guy and he trained kickboxing for a while and he just really kind of likes what I'm teaching. So he was like, yeah, man, I want to join the association. I'm like, well, all right. So I'm making my student handbook for them with all the. It's actually kind of fun for me because I like doing that kind of crap where working on the terminology and writing up the rules and I'm trying to shoehorn the one in about washing my car. I don't know if he's gonna catch that or not, but he's already signed the sheets.
See, now if you're up here, it would be brushing the snow off your car.
Yeah, see, that's exactly, and I'm sure that's probably where it comes in. 6:30 in the morning, be at my house, shovel the snow.
Okay, well, that's it for another episode of Karate Cafe, and we're going to try and every other week or every week, it's going to be Paul and I, with maybe a surprise guest here and there, and we'll try to keep it interesting.
Maybe we should do, Karate Idol, where people come in and audition,
Yeah, okay, I can be, what's his name, Robert Hung?
Robert, who?
The one that sang so bad.
Yeah, that's right. I never really ever watched the show. I get the pop culture, I catch the pop culture parts of it. I don't watch the show.
Yeah, same here.
But if we've said it before, and I know a while back our good buddy Gene set up a little firestorm, and we had a few people on one of the message boards that I'm on that were all, well, you guys need to have an Ishinru guy on there. You guys need to have a Kung Fu guy on there. And I'm like, well, we don't need to have anybody on there. But if anybody would like to come on, send us an email, talk to us, and, we'd like to have you on. So if you're out there and you, present yourself well and would like to talk about your style and martial arts in general, drop us a line and, we'll talk and give you a tryout. Maybe we'll have you on the show.
Okay, and for Karate Cafe, this is Pete Shambo.
And this is Paul Wilson.
Good night. Oops.